Major Plowman, Reel 15. I think you were saying that the 8th Army had some ambitions in this area of Austria.
Yes, well, they wanted every unit command, they wanted their men to have an area for recreation and rest and to, take advantage of the Wörthersee, which is one of the big lakes in Austria. And but it just wasn't room for all of them. And so when my colonel, who had some knowledge of Austria from pre-war, went to the general and pointed out to him a piece of blue well to the east of Klagenfurt, well out of this contingent area. And the general was very happy to oblige him. So we went to a lake called Kupinersee, which fitted very well. We had a hotel for our HQ mess, and the three squadrons were all around this lake. And they all had their own set up, very good accommodation, boats, and we could go from RHQ in the morning, we could go in a boat across to the A squadron for the first parade in the morning and back by boat. And it was really a wonderful time for the troops. That would be that bottom line.
What had happened to the Yugoslav partisans then? Had they withdrawn?
At this time, we then went back to armored cars. Greyhound armored cars. So we could get about more quickly and more suitably. With the road systems were reasonably good, not putting in it, not so difficult country. And we were on the just north of the river Drava, and we had to provide new patrols. This was the other little share back, half the regiment would be involved in recreation, and the other half. Patrolling. And our idea was to find out as much as we could about the Yugoslavs and their intentions and make a show of strength. We weren't going to be pushed about. And as I say, we were just the north of the River Drau. Called in German, and there was this Baylor Bridge across, which we called Swivel Baylor, because they mounted two dead partisans out of the side. And when it passed, they said, "Swivel Tita," Harold Tita, spelt Swivel, it's Z-I-V-I-L. So we almost got it, Swivel Bailey. And we patrolled south of the river on the Yugoslav border, and we had German, there was sort of sweep. I had an interpreter with me, spoke German. And we found out as much as we could. And of course, today you do it one day, another day, off going cooking or something. You couldn't get a very clear picture.
What were you looking for? Were you looking for anything specific on these patrols after the drama?
Very concerned that the Germans had, you know, weren't any subversive activities being planned. And to keep the peace, we didn't want to massacring civilians.
Were there any massacres or any intimidation going on at that time?
Intimidation. I don't think there were any massacres north of the border, but there were in the south, of course. They weren't above abducting people they thought were enemies of the T-terrorists. And then, of course, the SVA, in all that part of Austria, we had Chetniks, Hungarians, Cossacks.
And what were they doing?
In the case of the Hungarians, they had their wives with them, they retreated. Well, they collaborated with the German army against the Russians. and then the Cossacks, there's a whole Cossack division with all their horses, are riding almost every day. And the groom, now, I've always, helped me on and say, I wouldn't like 1 million, I'll let the ride every morning at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And we also had a riding school. This regular officer, I spoke to one of our troop leaders, and he ran this riding school, gave a towel. Then you'd be back on patrol the next day. Another interpreter, so we got a bit of bitty picture. But eventually, I remember, it was all over for the youth, the judge, as we called them, they went back. They went back, some didn't, because I recognized one of them. He was very young, 15 or 16, he wore his red star and had his arm. I recognized him. And sitting outside the house in Klagenfurt after the door. Of course, there was this, these chaps who had been recruited and intimidated to join. We went, then went north. We were sent for a period of a month or two to a place called Mühlau, north of Klagenfurt. Towards Spital, and two Mühlaus in Austria, at least two, and I can't remember how this one is specified. But this was just the army of occupation duties. We were in a lovely village or small town, and it's sort of a natural battle after the name went up to Spital. We were in the village guest house and paid very well. The people were very hungry. We were lost because we had some, when the fraternization was allowed, we gave a sort of party at the village hall. And our corporal cook, at some stage, he was dancing. At some stage, he came in bearing a huge tray of goodies, holding it up like this. And the whole place was very full. And as they all converged on him, and the tray went up in the air, and it was all over the place. But they were a bad type of food.
On the final phase, when you were going up over the Po and over the Adige and beyond, did you encounter any resistance at all?
No, there were just the German bands in the mountains. And we had to go and check up that these villages were occupied or unoccupied, but there was very little.
Did you...
General Fire, Captain Venice on his own, and he loaded in a jeep ahead of everybody else. They just got to the border as quickly as they could, the Germans, after the effigy.
Did you capture any Germans, take any POW on this way north?
A lot of prisoners were taken, huge numbers.
What impression did they make on you?
They didn't look too happy, but they looked in reasonable condition, most of them. You know, one of the used that sort of thing, but as they put in these camps, or down in the area where I went to the town, there were very big numbers of calls. I don't think we did any prisoners or guards, but these other. In Austria, they had problems with that. The Cossacks and Bulgarians and Czechs, they were a bit of a worry. They were terrified of them.
Indeed. Were you aware of what was going on at the time concerning them? How did you hear about it? Did it come through on the grapevine, or...?
The guy who was in Shipped East, put on the train. Shipped East. He worked on a certain death or imprisonment. In the Cossacks. He didn't stand a chance. And they were all young fellows there. He was just caught up in a terrible situation. And in the case of that, for the grace of God, went by. But what did you do? He didn't like the Russians much, and the Germans came along, so they'd come and join us. He did 3 meals a day, and the uniform and so on. He'd just stay here. You'd probably be shot, Of course, then these units, they try to keep some sort of military discipline and all. They were appeasing the Russians.
Did you see anything of them or hear anything about them
no.
at the time?
By this time, talking about the regiment as a whole, the compartment is very delicate mark to the chief population center. That wasn't far from the Russian film. I don't know how far, 20, 30, 40 miles. Because there was an area of Styria, which was part of some of Styria, it was in the Russian town.
Did you get briefed on the occupation and the division of Austria up into different zones?
Yes, it was like a constant. Giving directives on how to get on, what to do. It's the fraternization. All this. Quite extraordinary because when we were, I think, that mid July, it was cancelled. Within hours, you saw these private soldiers out with a roasted grill on his arm. You could tell it wasn't their first acquaintance.
I was going to ask about that, because it always seemed to me to be the kind of order that is virtually impossible to enforce. Yeah. So.
And we were all decent people, you know. Friendly towards the troops, not telling them. Troops had given a bit of bully beef and they'd have them in and give them the meal and so on. And anybody spotted it, they looked the other way. Although I never saw it going on myself, but it, I saw them walking out of them.
Afterwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there any sense of impatience in the regiment to get home, because...
Yes, well, we couldn't find anything out. My letters home, I'm constantly saying, you know, I don't know anything yet. You have to be very patient. My number's not very high. I'm not due for... It's too high, I'm not due for immediate release. We don't know anything yet.
I mean, did you have any idea at all about, or expectations about, how long you might have to stay in?
No, in fact, the period was much shorter than we expected. My sergeant went home in September, I think, early September. Because of his age and he'd been in the arms, a break of law, I think, it would be. Our colonel went home, I think in August. We saw him off from Kupana, say, and we moved into this new railway in September, so yes. It started to get out of that window. And then it gradually speeded up.
Well, I mean, did the regiment get new men coming in to replace those who went home, or was it running down in size?
Yes, what... throughout the autumn, they were going, the older ones were going, for the long serving ones. and we were all going on leave. I went in leave now. But late October, back early December. And soon after that, we heard that we were going to be reorganized as an independent army, which would serve in the Middle East. Then we received a lot of new young soldiers, young officers and young soldiers. And those who were due for early release at that point left us and went to other units until their time was up.
How did they get on, the new young arrivals? How did they settle in?
Yes, okay. There's no problem. The young officers were a bit difficult to integrate them. They took a bit of time. They shouldn't have done it. But they were there for the sort of jollification rather than a bit difficult to. Make them into serious soldiers. All the time we're having a farewell party for this chap or that chap. back in Austria, yes, we had this spell in Mura, which was purely occupational. Nothing, everything was entirely peace. I saw my first Ukrainian priest, St. Rose. a different light, of course, from the other one. And we went back to Papyrus Island on yesterday, the very end of September. We were ordered down into the Pearl Valley, where they were worried that it would give communists. And so that was to be our show the flag. And after 2 or 3 weeks, we went on a big sweep. which involved visiting all the historic towns of Italy, Parma, Modena, Piacenza, Mantua, and so on. Very interesting for us. And pictures organized that we covered. Lombard plane to the east of Milan. Well, it was a great experience, really. And of course, I hope to get up into the village on the Lake Calhoun, past the Villa d'Este, and I wondered if Alex was entertaining Winston at that time. Or
did you see any signs of communist activity in those areas as you went through?
No, not much. No. Of course, you see, that's the trouble with armored cars. You don't really find a lot out under peacetime conditions.
Well, how did you get on with the Greyhound? This was a new armored car for you, wasn't it?
Yes, all right. I don't know what we've been like in Warmshire, because it just went on road.
Why was that? Was it too heavy for off road?
Well, we didn't need to go on. Now, again, it was in the Pearl Valley, it was very difficult to take on the car, any armored car off the road. Well, at least American motor vehicles were highly reliable. But we never had one. I don't know what gun we had. It was a large Browning. And we never had a fire. The interesting way one that I was a little incident. I was down on the Pearl. All the bridges were blown over the Pearl, you see. And this road was quite a good tarmac road, ran parallel with the Pearl. Well, in the country I'm speaking of. And these peasants had tipped their maize out on some slope of the road, the camber, the road was camber. So instead of it was one-way traffic, virtually, but there was no traffic. They hadn't any petrol or anything. And I came in and I was going around with my children. And my children, there was this poor woman in widow's weeds proceeding along the top of it. And my chap touched his side, the eerie sort of noise. This woman literally took off like some flying witch in her widow's weeds. She landed in the ditch. But it was quite, there were many people. very few people to turn the field.
What did you think when you were told that you were going off to the Middle East? Were you happy to hear that you might be carrying on?
Yes, I was in 2 miles about whether I was joining the army. And eventually I signed on for 6 months, much to my father's disgust. And so that I finally finished in December 46. But, so, we, perfectly looking forward to it, really. Mm. Well, besides Egypt, anyway, came back from my leave in England to find myself appointed second command HQ squadron and regimental sports officer. And I reported to my squadron leader, who was very much an RHQ man, he'd been surgeon's officer and then adjutant and squadron leader. And he said, I've got this job to do regimental sports. And I don't really know what's involved. And he said, well, all right. He said, well, you get on with that. He said, I'll look after the squadron. You no need to worry about the squadron at all. So that afternoon, there was an inter-squadron. I can imagine the chamber, in the stadium in the chamber. And it's another December afternoon, a bit chilly, but sunshine, mountains, the distance. I thought this was quite a good way of spending the afternoon. And then my commanding officer arrived and sat down beside me. He said, how many minutes have they playing each way? I don't know, Colonel. What's the name of the referee? I don't know, Colonel. What are the rules if it's a draw? I don't know, Colonel. And suddenly I realised I've got to get down to this job, you see. And literally, I had to find the equipment, the fixtures, any man who wanted to play any game. And I organized skiing parties to go to Cortina and Asiago. I never had time to go myself. And football matches within the division. Any sport you I care to mention, I had to
organize it.
And I was kept extremely busy. Mm. And when we got to Egypt, we were stationed at Kassassin between Cairo and about halfway between Cairo and the canal. And only 6 miles to Cairo, I think. And I used to be motoring to Cairo several days a week for some regimental event. Soccer or rugby playing myself or whatever.
Now, had you realised that this might happen to you when you went off on leave, that you
not
might come
all.
Back?
No, now. I don't know. In fact, I thought I'd go back to my squadron as a troop leader. Mm. And by then we were getting quite rapid promotion because we'd seen the officers of the party.
What impression did England make on you when you came back on leave? Because you'd been away for a couple of years, hadn't you?
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, they'd had a very hard time with rationing. Petrol was still good, everything was different. But it was home and fun. I was much more put off a year or two later when I came out, because it just got grimmer and grimmer. Instead of getting better, it got more grim. Was not cool, but it still went very cold. Bread, and we got bread rationing. I'd never been bread rationing in the wars. That was more severely cut. It was really a matter of catching up with what had been, you know, in one's family, what had been going on, and so on, and traveling about the country with various relatives and friends, and went by train most now got the, we were allowed free travel in Rare One. I didn't wear them.